ನಾನು ಶ್ರೀ ಗೌರಂಗ.
ಓಂ ನಮಃ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ. ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ. ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ. ನಾರಾಯಣ.
ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಫಸ್ಟ್ ಕ್ಯಾಂಟೋ 8th ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ಟೆಕ್ಸ್ಟ್ ನಂಬರ್ 34.
ಭಾರಾವತಾರಣ ಯಾನ್ಯೇ ಭುವೋ ನಾವಯಿ ಬೋಧಧೌ ಸೇದಂತ್ಯಾ ಭೂರಿ ಭಾರೇಣ ಜಾತು ಹ್ಯಾತ್ಮ ಭುವಾರ್ಥಿತಃ ಭಾರಾವತಾರಣಾಯಾನ್ಯೇ ಭುವೋ ನಾವಯಿವೋ ದಧೌ ಸೇದಂತ್ಯಾ ಭೂರಿ ಭಾರೇಣ ಜಾತು ಹ್ಯಾತ್ಮ ಭುವಾರ್ಥಿತಃ.
ಭಾರತ ಪರ್ಪೋತ್ ಬೈ ದಿವೈನ್ ಗ್ರೇಸ್ ಎಸ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಶಿಲ್ಪಾದ ಕಿ. ಅದರ್ಸ್ ಸೇ ದಟ್ ದ ವರ್ಲ್ಡ್ ಬೀಂಗ್ ಓವರ್ ಬರ್ಡನ್ಡ್ ಲೈಕ್ ಅ ಬೋಟ್ ಅಟ್ ಸೀ ಇಸ್ ಮಚ್ ಅಗ್ರೀವ್ಡ್ ಅಂಡ್ ದಟ್ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ಹೂ ಇಸ್ ಯುವರ್ ಸನ್ ಪ್ರೇಡ್ ಫಾರ್ ಯು ಅಂಡ್ ಸೋ ಯು ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ಅಪಿಯರ್ಡ್ ಟು ಡಿಮಿನಿಷ್ ದ ಟ್ರಬಲ್. ಪರ್ಪೋಟ್: ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ದ ಫಸ್ಟ್ ಲಿವಿಂಗ್ ಬೀಯಿಂಗ್ ಬಾರ್ನ್ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಆಫ್ಟರ್ ದ ಕ್ರಿಯೇಷನ್ is the direct son of Narayana. Narayana, as Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, first of all entered the material universe. Without spiritual contact, matter cannot create. This principle was followed from the very beginning of the creation. The Supreme Spirit entered the universe, and the first living being, Brahma, was born on a lotus flower, grown out of the transcendental abdomen of Vishnu. Vishnu is therefore known as Padmanabha. Brahma is known as Atmabhu because he was begotten directly from the father without any contact of mother Lakshmi. Lakshmiji was present near Narayana, engaged in the service of the Lord, and still without contact with Lakshmi, Narayana begot Brahma. That is the omnipotency of the Lord. One who foolishly considers Narayana like other living beings should take a lesson from this. Narayana is not an ordinary living being. He is the personality of Godhead himself, and he has all the potencies of all the senses in all parts of his transcendental body. An ordinary living being begets a child by sexual intercourse, and he has no other means to beget a child other than the one designed for him. But Narayana, being omnipotent, is not bound to any condition of energy. He is complete and independent to do anything and everything by his various potencies, very easily and perfectly. Brahma is therefore directly the son of the father and was not put into the womb of a mother. Therefore, he is known as Atmabhu. This Brahma is in charge of further creations in the universe, secondarily reflected by the potency of the omnipotent. Within the halo of the universe, there is a transcendental planet known as Shvetadvipa, which is the abode of the Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, the Paramatma, future of the Supreme Lord. Whenever there is trouble in the universe that cannot be solved by the administrative demigods, they approach Brahmaji for a solution. And if it is not to be solved even by Brahmaji, then Brahmaji consults and prays to the Kshirodakshaya Vishnu for an incarnation and solution to the problems. Such a problem arose when Kamsa and others were ruling over the earth, and the earth became too much overburdened by the misdeeds of the asuras. Brahmaji, along with other demigods, prayed at the shore of the Kshirodaka ocean, and they were advised of the descent of Krishna as the son of Vasudev and Devaki. So some people say that the Lord appeared because of the prayers of Brahmaji.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. We are reading from the chapter Prayers of Queen Kunti. From text 32 onwards, 32, 33, 34 and 35. Yeah, 32 to 35, Kunti Maharani is speaking on one particular theme in these verses. She is speaking about why does the Supreme Lord appear in this world. So she is giving several reasons. Yesterday we were hearing about Apare Vasudevas Devakyam Yachitobhyagata. Devaki and Vasudev were great devotees of Krishna. And by their penance and by their request, the Lord appeared. Although he is Ajaha, Ajastvam Asya Kshemaya. And also, she gives another reason, Vadaya Chasuradvisham, to kill the demons. The Lord appeared. Then before that she says, Kechir, some people say, Ahu, Ajam Jatam, although the Lord is unborn, Punya Shlokasya Kirti, because there were great Punyatmas like Yadu, Yadu Priyasyan Babaye, in Yadu's family Lord Krishna appears. So, in order to please the Yadu dynasty kings, king like Yadu, Lord appears. So, in this way she gives many different reasons. And today she is giving another reason. Others say that the world, being overburdened like a boat at sea, is much aggrieved, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and so you have appeared to diminish the trouble. So, as it is explained here, the world becomes overburdened sometimes. The earth is already burdened with big mountains like Mount Everest or like the vast oceans which are already heavy. But the earth is ready to tolerate those burdens. But when there are demoniac living beings who burden the earth, and there is a verse which says, when there is a liar, Bhumi cannot tolerate a liar, or one who tells lies, she considers it like a very big burden. She cannot tolerate. So, not only liars, but also demons who are against the purpose of Lord Vishnu. They are on the surface of the earth, then earth feels it like a great burden. So, certainly one should not foolishly assume that the earth has no weight, and it is just flying like a swab of cotton in the space, simply by itself, automatically. That would be like a child's imagination. So, scientists always look for some newer and newer theories to justify the functioning of the universe. So, they said maybe there is some gravitational pull from the center of the earth, which pulls all the objects towards the center. That's why you throw something, it comes down. Similarly, they have come up with a theory that if there are two masses floating in the sky, there is a mutual attraction between them, m1, m2 by r square. So because of that attraction, maybe all the planets are revolving in orbits, and they are staying in orbits, and the universe is going on. Such bodies are able to exist. So one body with a weight attracts another body with the weight, and that's how they are balancing and somehow surviving. This is the theory. But Prabhupada explains, in Bhagavatam purports you will find how the heavy objects like the earth or like the sun. The sun is 14 lakh times more heavier than the earth. 400,000 times more heavier. Prabhupada explains in one purport about how such objects are floating in this universe. It's not an ordinary thing, it's a miracle. So anybody who wants to sit or stay requires some support. Like all of us are now stably sitting on the ground. So it's not possible to keep an object stably without gaining support of another. Like the book is resting on the this wooden plank, and this is resting on the platform, and this platform is resting on the ground. So everything meets a resting place. So Lord Baladev or Balaram is one. It is said when Lord Vishnu creates all the universes, it is Lord Baladev who appears as Ananta. On his hoods, all the universes which come out of Vishnu's body, they rest on the top of the hoods of Baladev, by which he balances all the universes in their position. Otherwise, even universe cannot survive. What to speak of a planet like Earth? Even for universe to stay stable and do its function, Lord Baladev, who does not rest on any support, he has to offer support for even the universes. And within the universes, for all the planets revolve, it's the same Baladev's pulling strength or attractive strength by which the Lord Ananta keeps all the planets in orbit by a special type of Shakti. The Shakti comes from him. Otherwise, the planets cannot stay in orbit. So even if it is the gravitational pull between the planets, Prabhupada challenges in one place, where does the gravitational pull come from? It has to have a source. Because any pushing, pulling has to be done by someone, isn't it? Like you can pull someone or push someone. So there has to be a cause. Without a cause, how can you perceive the effect? If somebody is saying there is a pulling tendency between the planets, but where is the pulling tendency comes from? It doesn't come automatically. That comes from Baladev. Prabhupada explains that. And also he says that the planets are very heavy, undoubtedly, but they become light how? As Lord Krishna says, Gama Vishacha Bhutani Dharayami. Dharayami means I hold them. Aham Ojasa. By my ojas or shakti, I hold all the planets in their respective orbits, Krishna is saying. How? Gam avishya. Gam avishya means I enter into these planets, he says. Gam means the planets. I enter into these planets. So Krishna says, I enter into these planets and keep them in orbit. So Prabhupada says, the aeroplane is flying in the sky. Why? Because the pilot has entered into it. The pilot has entered and he is keeping the aeroplane in orbit. I mean, he is keeping the aeroplane flying in the sky because he is operating the machines. And that is how he is able to fly from one place to another. Similarly, if some Atma enters into a dead object, then that dead object becomes very light. For example, when a father and child are walking, the father has to just catch one small finger of the child, you know. That's all the child is holding. The father is holding the small finger of the child, and the child is able to walk. How? Because there is spirit present in the body of the child. As soon as there is no spirit, immediately the child will drop dead on the ground. But as long as there is spirit, the father can just touch the child and walk with the child. Body becomes very light. Even scientifically you can see when a person dies, you measure the weight of a person. The weight increases after a person dies. When a person is living, the weight is less. So the spirit is light and the matter is heavy. The spirit is bright, the matter is dark. So many comparisons can be made between spirit and matter. So Prabhupada says, similarly, when there is spirituality, the whole world is light. When there is materialism, the whole world becomes heavy and troublesome, he says. Just like now in Pune city, everything is going peacefully. People are going here, they are doing different activities. Says, suddenly there are some terrorists who creep in. they create some bomb blast, like they did in Bombay, in such a heavily crowded train, suddenly putting some bombs. So that creates a disturbance. Immediately all the policemen, everyone becomes very disturbed. Same way, the demigods become disturbed when the demons create problems in this world. And these problems are irregular and unexpected, unforeseen. Why? Because the criminals and terrorists, they don't work in a regularized way or in a systematic way or as per the laws of the government. They work in an unexpected way. That causes more tension. Because people don't know where will they put bombs. Whether they will put in marketplace or whether they will put in the train or nobody knows. So it creates a kind of anxiety, fear amongst the public. So, the universe is created for a particular purpose. The conditioned souls who want to enjoy separate from the Lord, they are given an opportunity in this world to live life in a certain way by which they can become purified. Like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, at the dawn of the universe, the Lord sent forth demigods. He also sent forth rain showers. He sent forth all the necessities and facilities. Like you see, the fruits and flowers and grains and cereals and ratnas and gold and silver. Everything Lord has sent. So the living entities can live peacefully. If everyone takes their quota, tena tak tena bhunjita, and one can live a life very, very peacefully, happily. If people don't become greedy for another man's property, and if people live according to the laws of God, there will be no trouble in this world, even in material world. Material world, although it is dukkalayam, there is suffering of birth and death, old age and disease. Still, Prabhupada says, if one lives according to laws of God, our sufferings can be very much minimized. One can live very happily, even in this world. Like for example, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, you live your life according to the platform of goodness. Like for example, your thinking, your speech, your actions, your lifestyle, live according to the platform of goodness. You will find that most of the sufferings are gone. You will see. Because in mode of goodness, you are tolerant. You are ready to tolerate others and you are able to live peacefully. And mode of goodness also, one does many things like yajna, dana, tapa, one does very naturally. One is pious. And one causes very little harm to others. And one lives simply. Very simply. One doesn't encroach on others' property. So it's only due to passion and ignorance that the world becomes a troublesome place. Of course, in mode of goodness, if one is living without endeavoring to go back to Godhead, then one has to be born again and again. Or one has to be born as a demigod. And demigods are also not peaceful. Anytime Indra can be chased off from his post. So there is danger even in heavenly planets. So the Shastras suggest the living entities that you live a life in mode of goodness while preparing to return back home, back to Godhead. Because at no time this material world can be considered a safe place because there is always death. At any time death can come. So, Shastras teach one how to even live happily in this world. Live happily and leave happily. That's what they are giving a program for that. So that is possible by Brahminical culture, which is established by Lord Brahma at the dawn of creation. Lord Brahma is the first created living being. So he brings about a very nice atmosphere in the world. He is the supreme living entity amongst all the living entities in this creation. So he is a well-wisher of every living entity. He thinks how the living entities have come for a certain business here, let them, you know, they have come for a plan to enjoy separately, but let them live, let them enjoy through the Vedic scriptures. Let them, okay, they want to enjoy, but how can they enjoy? Okay, let them enjoy according to the plan of God, not enjoy by breaking the laws of God. So the Vedas also give a clue to the living entities how to enjoy life by living in accordance to the scriptures. So according to whatever level one wants to surrender to God, one is allowed to surrender according to his capacity. Somebody wants to do karma kanda and surrender only a little bit, he is allowed. Somebody wants to do jnana kanda or yoga kanda, I mean upasana kanda, huh? Karma kanda, jnana kanda, upasana kanda. One is allowed to surrender to Lord at whatever capacity and level one is. Everything is, the Vedas are called as a kalpataru or like a desire tree. Because there is everything in the Vedas. Whatever one wants to do in life, one can do, but do it in a way that God has sanctioned you to do. That kind of sanction is given. So Brahma wants to see the living entities also live a peaceful life. Just like a father at home, you know, he brings some toys for the children. He says, you take this toy, you take that toy. But sometimes he finds, you know, the children are pulling each other's hair, you know, catching each other's collar and punching on one another, you know, fighting sometimes. Father says, why? I have got toys for all of you. You take this, you take that, be peaceful. But sometimes there is a quarrel amongst children. Similarly, in this world also, there is quarrel, but the primary quarrel creators are the demons. Demigods are generally peace-loving. Like, you know, there are people who are called as sajjan. Sajjan means, you know, they say, you be happy, I'll be happy. But sadhu is one who is ready to suffer for others' happiness. He's sadhu. But demigods are mostly in a platform of, you be happy, I'll be happy. I am okay, you're okay. They would like to see all living entities happy. In mode of goodness also, a person thinks, sarve janaha sukhino bhavantu. We will never hear that the demigods went to demons to attack them and take away their property. You will never hear in Bhagavatam. But you do hear that the demons are snatching away demigods' property. See, this is a practical proof. The demigods actually are satisfied with whatever God has given. But the demons, like you see, Bali Maharaj is going to Indralok, taking away Indra's position. You find Hiranyakashipu going to Indraloka, taking away all the three planetary systems, encroaching on the property of the demigods and trying to hold it for oneself. You will find that, demons doing that. So, the demons are trouble creators in Lord's plan. Because the demons think that I can achieve everything in this world by my own strength. They have no faith in God. That's the definition of a demon. A demon generally thinks, I am the doer, I am the... Like you see, Kamsa, like I was speaking this for the Janmashtami, it was so interesting, that section in the 10th canto, where Kamsa is calling Akrura. See these two people's mentality. Here is one very great devotee, pure devotee of the Lord Akrura, and here is the demon Kamsa. You can compare both their natures. Kamsa is thinking, this Krishna Balaram, I want to get them here into Mathura and kill them. So he is making a plan, and very, very carefully he is molding a, you know, he is plotting a plan, because if they refuse to come, there will be problem. So he is making an announcement that I am going to do some Dhanur Yajna. But what kind of Yajna a demon can do? So Krishna says, Ajante Nama Yajnaste Dhambe Na Vidhi Purvakam. Even the Yajna that a demon may do is also not meant for the pleasure of Vishnu, but it is meant for self-aggrandizement. Or here, in the case of Kamsa, the yajna was performed. What kind of yajna he did? In order to kill Krishna. That's the purpose for which he did then yajna there. So he had made a plan. He was telling Akrura, Akrura, hear my plans. You know, when Krishna Balaram will enter, I have made such ideas by which, you know, first Kolapid will kill him. In case he escapes Kolapid, elephant, then he will come ahead. Then there is Chandra and Mushtik, there is very powerful wrestlers. They will destroy these small boys, Krishna Balaram. So they are all so powerful, they are like mighty elephants. So he had arranged the 3-4 enemies for Krishna and Balaram, so that Krishna Balaram will be killed even before they can approach Kamsa. But somehow if Krishna Balaram survived beyond all these enemies, then at last Kamsa had planned, I myself will kill them. He had thought like that, he had made a plan. So it was his demoniac plan, Kamsa's plan to kill Krishna and Balaram, with which he wanted to send Akrura. Now here is a point, why he sent Akrura? Because he knew, if he sends a wrestler like Chandur or Mushtik, go and bring Krishna. Then he thought Krishna Balaram may refuse to come out of fear. thinking that my uncle is inimical to me, maybe he will want to kill me. So he didn't want to send anybody whom Krishna might consider as enemy. Because already he had sent many, many enemies before. Putana, Agasur, Bakasur, so many asuras went. And they were all killed by the hands of Krishna. So now he thought, let me not send anybody who looks like an enemy. Let me trick Krishna Balaram by sending Akrura. Because Akrura was very dear to Krishna Balaram. So I will send someone very dear to them, and I will get them, and I will kill them. That was his plan. So demon always thinks I am very smart. I am very intelligent. A devotee knows that I may be very smart, but my smartness is of no use if Krishna doesn't sanction. But here we find Kamsa thinking himself to be over smart and he is overconfident. He is calling Akrura, and he wants to, the demon has a nature, because he has such a uncontrolled mind and senses, he will cheat everyone and anyone. He is trying to cheat Akrura also. Like he is calling Akrura and saying, Akrura, look at this beautiful Anena Ratham, he says. Look at this beautiful new chariot, golden chariot. So he wanted to gift him a new chariot in order to impress Akrura to go to Vrindavan and bring Krishna Balaram. Just like sometimes, if somebody is, somebody is very fond of driving cars, any new model car you bring, like Sarvani Krishna Prabhu, like somebody like Sarvani Krishna Prabhu who is dealing with automobiles and cars. So you tell him, here is a new car, here is a new Suma has come or new Benz car has come. Would you like to give a test drive to this? How happily he will immediately jump in and he will, get into driving it. He'll be fond of it. Similarly, Akrura is told by Kamsa here. Kamsa is telling Akrura, look at this beautiful golden chariot, take it. And he thought he is going to be very happy. And Akrura smiled. But do you think Akrura smiled because he got a new golden chariot? No. He smiled because I am getting an opportunity to go to Vrindavan and see Krishna. But Kamsa also smiled happily. I have nicely cheated Akrura. So Kamsa is such a fool. That's the nature of a demon. So he is sending Akrura and telling Akrura that Ugrasen, who is a bold man, he is saying he is a Kamuk. He is attached to the kingdom. Even in such a old age, he is sitting in the throne and he wants to rule. He is such a person. So he says, I will kill this Ugrasena. Actually, he is telling, all of them I will finish. How? First I will kill Krishna Balaram, and after they are killed, I will kill all this one by one. He is telling all the names. And then he says, as far as Jarasandha is concerned, Jarasandha mama guru, he says. Jarasandha is my guru. So, this goes to show the demons like to make alliance also with other demons. Just like Duryodhana wanted to make alliance with many other demoniac kings. And Lord Krishna, who is the father of all religious principles, comes there in Kurukshetra and destroys all the Kauravas along with their demoniac allies. Everyone is finished. You can see that. So, you can see a devotee always follows another devotee. A devotee is a follower of another devotee. A demon is a follower of another demon. You will see that. Like Prabhupada says, when Arjuna is fighting the battle of Kurukshetra, he had a flag in the top in which there was Hanuman, Bajrangaji. So Prabhupada is saying, Hanuman is a follower of Bajrangaji. And Hanuman, Arjuna is praying to Hanuman, oh Hanumanji, earlier you had a war with, you brought Mother Sita back to Ram, and you were working for the mission of the Lord, and I am on the same mission. So he is seeking his blessings. Please help me and guide me so that I will be able to be successful in this battle, which I am doing for the pleasure of Krishna. Same way, devotees also follow in the footsteps of previous acharyas and superiors in order to be successful in their mission. And what is their mission? Their mission is Lord's mission. They don't have any independent mission on their own. But the demon has his mission and he likes to make allies with other demoniac people. And he makes demoniac plans, like Kamsa was making demoniac plans. And that is how the demons create a great disturbance in the world. Because the plans are always such that they cause disturbance to the peaceful living of all the living entities in this world. And not only they create disturbance physically, more importantly, they create disturbance to the spiritual practice of all the living entities. Physically, if somebody loses a body, that is not a very big loss. You can always get a replacement again. But the disturbance created for the spiritual welfare of all the living beings, that is a very great disturbance. So the demons create a systematic disturbance in the spiritual propagation of the Sankirtan movement. That's the nature of demons. Because demons are against the purpose of Lord Vishnu. And that is why the Bhumi considers them a far more greater burden. Sometimes, like you hear the story of Alvars, no? There was one Alvar who was in a small cottage. But when one more Alvar came, one more devotee came, he told him also, you also sit with me. So earlier he was very peacefully lying down. When the another Alvar came, there was not enough place. So he said, let us both sit and let us do Krishna Katha and Bhajan. They were doing. Then when a third devotee came, then he said there was not enough place. Then all three of them stood up. Because there was only enough place for one to sleep or two to sit and three to stand. So what did they prefer? So all three of them are standing and they were doing Krishna Bhajan. So in this way, a devotee is simply joyful doing Krishna's bhajan as long as the bhajan goes on. As long as the kirtan movement goes on, a devotee is happy, ready to tolerate inconveniences on oneself, tolerate problems and sufferings, as long as the Lord's mission is going on. On the other hand, the demons you will find, as soon as there is a demon, some people cannot live even in one room with two people. If there is a big house sometimes, one person is living in this. If a husband and wife have bitter relationship sometimes, somebody is living in that room, you are living in this room, but your mind tells you that that person is there in that room. That you cannot tolerate. You know? You can easily see that when you hate a person. Similarly, when Bhumi sees that somebody is against the purpose of the Lord, then that appears to be a great burden for her. She cannot tolerate that. Like, you know, devotees have practical experience working in offices. They go to office, they say, oh, it is so troublesome to tolerate people who have a demoniac nature against the Lord's purpose. It's like a big burden. Somebody may tell you, what is the burden? You know, he is working in his computer and you are working in your computer. No. Still you feel that pain. On the other hand, in one room you dump, you know, 10 devotees, there is no enough place, people are somehow adjusting, they are living. And with a non-devotee, it's difficult to live. Even if you are living, only two of you in one house you are living, it's very difficult. They feel the pain. Similarly here, Bhumi is also saying, she is not able to bear the burden of the non-devotee demons. So, just as these people, demoniac living beings, pose, become a burden, as we say, you know, you have to actually take the burden of the superiors. Like Brahmaji is the first person in the creation, Acharya, first Acharya. And he is handing over to everyone. And then Tene Brahma Hridayadi Kave. Then Lord gave it to Brahma and Brahma is giving knowledge to Narada. Narada is giving it to Vyas. It's coming down. So all the people in this creation should shoulder the burden of Brahmaji. Not burden the shoulders. We should not do the opposite. So what is Brahma's mission? Brahma's mission is to see that all living entities live peacefully, become Krishna conscious, become liberated from the clutches of material existence and go back home, back to Godhead. To that effect, all the acharyas fulfill that purpose. Same purpose. Just like Arjuna is fulfilling the same purpose of Hanuman, who is also a great fighter. Similarly, all the living beings, they should find out how we can align ourselves with the purpose of the first son of the Lord, Brahma, who knows actually the purpose of the creation. In fact, the demigods generally try to sort out the problems themselves in the beginning by going to Indra. When Indra cannot sort out, then they go to Brahma after that. Then Brahma also tries to sort out. You will find in many cases, like you see Vishwamitra is performing severe penance. And when he is performing severe penance, because of the power of his penance, there are problems that many demigods go and report, then Brahma comes. First Brahmaji gives him, you become Maharishi. First he gives him Rajarishi post, and he's not satisfied. Then he gives him Maharishi. Then he gives him Rajarishi. So there are many living beings who create different kinds of troubles to living entities. Like for example, the living entities want to acquire some tapobal by which they want to dominate other living beings. Even the yogis would do that. But the demons are even worse. The demons, if you see, for example, Hiranyakashipu. Some living entities want to assume powers and display the powers to others to become famous. Whereas there are other demons who want to acquire powers by which they want to destroy the Brahminical culture in the universe. That is even worse. Not only to show one's greatness, but to also to work against the Lord's purpose. So this is called violence. This is real violence. The meaning of violence is to act against the purpose of the Lord. And you will find many demons like that. So when what we can learn from our life, we may be very happily satisfied that I am not a demon anyway. I am a devotee. But as a devotee, we also have to know that there are demoniac tendencies in us. There are demoniac qualities in us, due to which we can also become a burden to the spiritual master, or we can become a burden to the society of ISKCON, become trouble creators. Like for example, somebody may become a devotee but is continuously committing so many offenses to other Vaishnavas, creating trouble to other Vaishnavas, it's possible. So that is also one type of burden. Like for example, if one is a spiritual leader, his meditation should be simply the welfare of the other devotees. Just like Brahmaji is here contemplating on the welfare of all the living entities. Similarly, every person who is in some capacity a leader, like the mother, the father, the guru, the counselor, the department head, or the managers, or presidents, or GPCs, or gurus, or sannyasis, all of them. So they should follow in the footsteps of Brahma by contemplating on the welfare of the subordinates, welfare of the members of the society. Find out how each and every member of society can be happily situated in Krishna consciousness. How can the mischievous tendency in them be purified? And how that can be cleansed? So that they can focus their attention on Krishna or Vishnu completely, and without getting distracted from the goal of life. So their contemplation should be that. Not to promote themselves, not to become self-important, or not to become selfish for their own purpose, but to actually work for the welfare of other people. That means contemplation of others' welfare is the goal for any person who is in the capacity of a leader. On the other hand, one who is in the capacity of a subordinate, their life is considered a success if they simply follow the superiors like a loyal dog. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says,
Sarvasvato mar charane sampiya podechi tomar ghare tumito taku tomar kuku boliya jano humore.
So, like this household dog who watches the house and, protects the house from thieves and rogues entering, and also very happily he serves the master. He says, when the bell rings, then the dog immediately runs. Similarly, when the bell rings, immediately the devotee runs to take darshan of the Lord, when the conch shell blows. And when the prasadam is served, just like he is saying, whatever the devotees leave as remnants for me to eat, I happily accept that. The Uchishta, very happily. Similarly, devotee is simply satisfied like a dog of the devotees. So, it's a very great privilege for a devotee to be in that position of serving the devotees simply like a loyal dog. So, not only we are Krishna's dog, we are also dog of the devotees. Somebody may say, I am only Krishna's dog and I don't care for the devotees. Today morning I was just seeing one of the devotees who was when offering the chamari, was, you know, while offering the chamari, was touching the tulasi, you know. So tulasi was getting little hit, you know. And this has been complained many times by many devotees. Brahmanas especially were serving on the other side of the altar. Tulasi Maharani is there. You know, while fanning the Lord, we should not be insensitive to, you know, beat the tulasi with the chamar. So you may be pleasing Krishna, but displeasing his devotee. It's very likely. So we may be very proud that I am Krishna's devotee, but then if we are insensitive to Krishna's devotees, and we hurt them and harm them, hurt their feelings, then how is Krishna going to be satisfied? So we cannot satisfy Krishna without satisfying his devotees. So we can become a burden as a subordinate. How? By not being loyal, by not being submissive, by being rebellious, by... we may think, I am not a demon, I am a devotee, but if we are rebellious devotee, then we are as good as demons only. Because again, we put, for example, in any mission like ISKCON or a part of ISKCON like Pune Temple, so either we can be part of the solution or we can be part of the problem. Yeah. For example, by posing problem to the superiors, then we are actually putting a stumbling block in the progress of Krishna consciousness, in the propagation of Krishna consciousness. Because what happens, for example, every person who is insubmissive, who is rebellious, who is irresponsible and all that, a major chunk of the energy of the superiors have to go there to pay attention to them in order to set it right, isn't it? For example, very simple example. Say in your body you have some sickness, you got some viral fever or something. Your 3 days job is finished. 3 days you just become bedridden, eat some antibiotics, you have to increase the immunity in the body and attack the diseased portion of the body and, you know, cure the body so that then the body becomes normalcy, hale and healthy. Then you can do the work. But what happened? 3 days of work is stunted. Same way, sometimes we may have a big project, we have many, many devotees. But if devotees pose burden to the project, they become a burden to the superiors by becoming insubmissive, uncooperative, quarrelsome, working against the purpose of the mission of Prabhupada. And by that what happens? Then that portion has to be paid attention. Then the superiors, rather than simply preaching and propagating Krishna consciousness, their whole attention goes on healing the diseased portion of the project. And you go all around the world, you find many times, sometimes sorting out the internal problems takes so much time that the propagation of Krishna consciousness is stunted. But if there is understanding amongst all, we understand that I should not become a burden on one hand, on the other hand, I should not remain a child, I have to become a grown-up person. Because, you know, we have to be innocent like children, but we also have to become grown-up in maturity, so that we become a very valuable property in the feet of Prabhupada to serve. So, then the mission of our society can be propagated very wonderfully, it can go on. So, here the burden that is being spoken about is Bhumi feeling the burden of the demons because they are destroyers of Brahminical culture. And she's feeling the burden and she's going to Brahmaji and praying to Brahma. And here Prabhupada is talking about Brahma in the purport, how Lord created Brahma from his own navel by creating a lotus flower. So Lord's activities are always adbhut, are very amazing. Naveda kaschit pagavamshchi kirshitam taveha manasya nrinam vidambanam nayasya kaschit dahitosti karhichit deshyascha yasmin vishamamatir nrinam. Kunti is telling, my dear Lord, you have no enemies in this world. See, nobody can kill Krishna because Krishna has a spiritual body. Nobody can harm him. So why should he fear? We may fear because we have a material body. Somebody can harm our material body. Somebody can cut our material body, destroy our material body. We have fear. But Krishna has no fear. Even if somebody attacks him, nobody can kill him. It's not possible. So many demons have tried fighting Krishna. Krishna never loses the war. You always find so many demons and demigods have fought against Krishna sometimes. Even Shiva was on the other side once with Banasura. If I'm Kalayavana, try to kill Krishna. So many people tried. So, those who tried to kill Krishna themselves got killed. Like so many demons came, Akasura, Bakasura, long list of demons. So Krishna cannot be killed because he has a spiritual body and naturally he has no fear. So nobody can become his enemy. Of course somebody can consider himself Krishna's enemy. But Krishna doesn't consider anybody his enemy. So the Lord comes into this world, marching into this world very happily, and he performs all these pastimes very playfully, killing the demons, playing with his devotees. Such is called Leela. Even everything that Lord does, even killing of the demons is also called Leela. Why? Leela means something playful that the Lord performs. Nothing is serious for the Lord. Nothing is fearsome. Even killing of demons is also one of the plays for him. So, that is the position of the Lord. And here you find the Lord's activities are such amazing activities that they give great pleasure to the hearts of devotees. And they give great wonderment and amazement to the hearts of the conditioned souls by seeing such activities. Like you find, Prabhupada writes elsewhere how every limb of the body of the Lord is transcendental and divine. Who can create a lotus from his own navel and create the first created living being Brahma like this? So for all the living entities, there are ways by which they can procreate. Like for example, the peacock. You know how the peacock procreates? With tears in his eyes. You know, he sends the tears of his eyes into the womb of the she peacock. Then that is how the peacocks are born. They have a different type of reproductive mechanism. Like you find there are some every living being has a different type of reproduction. See the pollen grains from the flowers, you know. They are picked up by some bumblebees or something and then taken to another plant and they are put there. And that's how they reproduce. So every living being has a different reproductive mechanism by which they reproduce. Like for human beings, Prabhupada says, but you will always find in all reproductive mechanisms you need a male and a female. Like you find even the cloning they are doing now. You find they take from a male form, they take from a female body, a male body they take. But then ultimately they have to go into the womb. You take 100 surrogate mothers, you put into their wombs, and then ultimately child has to be born. So there is no question of someone born without being put into the womb. But here he says Brahmaji was never put into any womb at all. He directly was given birth. And without any contact with female, Prabhupada says. So what does this prove? This goes to show that the Shaktiman is the origin of Shakti. Also, some people say Adiparashakti is original. She is the first. From her only everything has come, some people say. But here is a proof from the scriptures that the Lord creates Brahmaji without taking any help of the consort. From his own body he is creating. Lord is the origin of everyone. So the Shaktiman possesses the Shakti also. From him comes the Shakti. So that can be easily understood. Of course, Lord is so great, not only can he do such an activity, he can even empower someone to do such an activity. Like he creates Brahma. And from Brahma's body, so many sages and saints come. From Brahma's deliberation, you know, Narada is coming. From Brahma's thumb, you know, Daksha is coming. From Brahma's eyes, Atri is coming. Atri Muni is coming. Brahma is creating Saptarishis. So from his body he is creating with no one's help. But that is made possible by the Lord investing his potency in Brahma. Brahma takes shelter of the Lord and the Lord makes Brahma do wonderful things. Like Prabhupada says, when Lord Chaitanya was preaching in India, he could have very easily preached all over the world. It wasn't difficult for him. But why, Prabhupada says, why he preached only in India? I asked disciples, disciples couldn't say. And Prabhupada said, he wanted to leave the work for me. He wanted to give credit to his devotee. Just like, you know, for Ram, you know, to get Mother Sita is very easy. Why should he perform this long bounded Leela of, you know, Ravana taking away Mother Sita and he's sending Hanuman, you know, and to find out Sita and get Mother Sita back and all that. So, Lord wanted to glorify his devotee Hanuman in front of others. Similarly, the Lord leaves the credit to his devotee. That is actually the greatness of the Lord. Like Arjuna is asking Krishna, Krishna, why didn't you kill? You already showed in Vishwarupa Darshan that Drona, Bhishma, everyone is killed already. Now if you already killed them, now also physically kill them. You only kill them. I better not kill. I am feeling great problem, you know, to kill my relatives and friends. But Krishna says, no, I want you to become my instrument. Because Krishna wanted to glorify Arjuna. So Lord doesn't take the credit. That is one of his credits. One of his glories. That he never takes the credit. He wants to give the credit to his devotees. That is his nature. So, in this way, the Lord also sometimes empowers his devotees to perform miraculous things. Like Brahmaji is able to also create, exactly like Lord is creating from his own body. Brahmaji is also creating from his body also. So these are the two main things Prabhupada explains about how the Lord creates from his transcendental body, and his transcendental body can perform any kind of acts. One pastime comes to my mind in Ramayana, how when the Lord was walking in the forest, when Vishwamitramuni took him to a place, the Gautama Rishi's home, where there was a stone, and as soon as Lord Ram touched, immediately the stone turned into Ahilya. And both Ram and Lakshman, they bowed down in respect to Mother Ahilya. And after that he proceeded further. At one time, of course, when Lord Ram or Lord Krishna does anything, naturally the word spreads around. Whole world talks the glories, isn't it? After that. So everyone knew it. Lord Ram touched his feet on a stone and that turned into a beautiful woman. So when Lord Ram went to one particular place where he had to cross the Ganges with a boat, at that time a Nishada community man called Guha, who was a very great devotee of Lord Ramchandra, he came there. He requested Ram, can you please kindly stay in my house tonight and morning I will cross you across the river. He was a boatman. And Lord Ram agreed. He stayed overnight and next day morning he was supposed to take him in the boat. So before that he told Lord Ram, I would like to, you know, wash your feet thoroughly. Lord Ram asked, why do you want to wash me? Why do you want to wash my feet? Guha said, I don't know, you know, you put your foot on some particle of sand and that turned into Ahilya, I heard. Now if you put your feet into my boat, into all these things, you know, then my boat may become filled with so many women. And if I have to marry all of them, maintain them, I will not be able to maintain. So I want to see that your feet are thoroughly washed before you enter my boat. So in this way, he took advantage of washing Lord Ram's feet and drinking the water, sprinkling on his head. So, every limb of the body of the Lord is transcendental. See, the Lord's feet is touching a stone or a dust particle and it is able to produce, it is able to bring Ahilya back to life. Similarly, Lord is seeing with his eyes at the spiritual world and then he is picking up all the souls and putting them into the material world. Similarly, you will read in Bhagavatam a section where everything in this world was created. The Virat Purusha was, whole body of the Virat Purusha was created. But still there was no life. Everything was stagnant. Nothing is moving. The trees are not moving, sending forth winds. The birds are not flying in the sky. The ocean waves are not moving. They are all standstill. Everything is standstill in the whole creation. And the demigods are wondering, what is to be done? And then you will find in Bhagavatam the explanation, how they are trying to wake up the Virat Purusha. You'll find. But Virat Purusha is practically dead. But only by Lord's glance. When the Lord's glance falls in the creation, when the Lord enters into creation as a super soul, then the whole creation is set into motion. It's made possible. That's why, that is the reason we say, even a blade of grass cannot budge an inch. It cannot move without the sanction of the Lord, it is said. So the Lord is actually the source of everything. So Prabhupada is explaining how the Lord is supreme, but the demons are foolish and forgetful. And they work against the purpose of the Lord, creating a great burden or suffering for the Mother Earth. And Lord has two faces, construction and destruction. And the Lord keeps doing it. Like he says in Bhagavad Gita also, Sarvabhutani kaunteya prakritim yanti mamikam kalpakshaye punahastani kalpada visujameham. And he says, Bhutagrama sevayam bhutva bhutva praliyate. Lord creates this world, he destroys this world. Again he creates. At the end of this Kali Yuga, Lord comes as Kalki avatar. And Prabhupada says, there is no preaching at that time. Only preaching is killing. Lord will cut the throat. So, all the mlechas and javanas, they will not be able to give any reasons for their misbehavior. Lord will just cut the throat of all the sinful souls. So Lord does it, and it goes on. This kind of construction and destruction, creation, annihilation, keeps going on. But a devotee has to understand the purpose for which the world is created and align oneself with that purpose. And then by leading a pure life, Brahmaji and all the acharyas in the line, they all have the same purpose, to live a life in accordance to the Lord's instructions and help others to do the same and return back home back to Godhead. That is the purpose. So, as a lesson for ourselves, I was telling how we all should find out how we can become valuable, useful instruments in the hands of Guru and Krishna and be of some insignificant value to this society. The job that we do is very insignificant. Just like you see sometimes the ants are moving in a row. You know, every ant can maximum pick up one small grain of sugar, you know, and can. But if the ant is ready to align itself with all the other ants and go, then the right real job will be done, isn't it? Similarly, all of us, we can all do little bit of work. Like a squirrel's job we can do. We are not Hanuman to do great things, like what Prabhupada did. But whatever insignificant task is given to us, we should do it with the understanding that this world is temporary. Anytime, like Prabhupada says, our body is flapping only for a few moments. It's like a bubble in the ocean. The bubble forms and then it moves sometime, it's destroyed. This body will be taken away, it's only flapping for some time. So within that period of time, if we align ourselves with the purpose of Guru, Krishna and Acharyas, and we don't bring out our dirty demoniac qualities, which are actually the cause of going down, then our life is considered a success. So every individual has to remember that life is temporary and life is very short. And within that short time, we should find out how to make it fruitful and useful for our deliverance and for others' deliverance. Kantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki.